Welcome to Voyage Daily Finance, the most important news personalized for you every day. Supported by Voyage.com.
After listening to today's news, you'll know, first, the $435 billion yen carry trade surges, posing a systemic risk that could roil US equities if the Bank of Japan reverses course. We'll analyze why the Bank of Japan is trapped and how its next move could trigger a global financial shock hitting US markets. Second, a new dash for trash sees coal's share of global energy surge as the Hormuz crisis threatens to unravel Europe's. The Bank of Japan is effectively running a publicly subsidized money machine for global finance, and speculators have poured a staggering $435 billion into it in just 2 years. A while back, we noted how constant selling of yen to buy high-yielding dollars was pushing the currency toward that 160 per dollar line. Today's tally shows just how big that fire hose has become. It's called the yen carry trade, and as we've discussed before, it's become the financial world's favorite bet. The strategy is simple. Borrow yen at rock-bottom interest rates and plow that cash into higher return assets like US stocks. The profits for global investors are estimated to be in the tens of billions of dollars. But this massive flow of easy money brings both enormous profits for investors and, at the same time, comes with a terrifying systemic risk for the entire global financial system. A sudden reversal could trigger a global risk-off event. That's a fancy way of saying investors would panic and sell everything risky, hitting assets like US equities and high-yield credit hard as leverage positions are closed out. A while back, as the yen slid toward that 160 mark, Japan's finance minister warned Tokyo was ready to take all available means, a clear hint at possible currency intervention, exactly the kind of jolt that can snap this trade and force rapid deleveraging. We even saw a preview of this when an earlier Bank of Japan policy shift caused the yen to jump significantly against the dollar, highlighting just how sensitive the market is. The entire trade hinges on Japan keeping its monetary policy loose. You might think the Bank of Japan's first rate hike since 2007 would have stopped the party, but the trade barely flinched. We previously flagged that markets were even pricing roughly a 70% chance of another hike around April, while the IMF praised Japan's resilience, but also admitted nobody really knows what Japan's neutral rate is anymore. Translation. The Boje is flying blind, which makes every hint of tightening dangerous for crowded carry positions. This creates a persistent fear on Wall Street. If the Boje decides to aggressively raise rates to manage its own economy, it could trigger a global financial shock. The profit margins would vanish, and a stronger yen would mean heavily leveraged hedge funds would need far more dollars to repay their massive yen-denominated debts. This brings us to the core dilemma for the Bank of Japan. They are caught in what some economists call a reflationary trap. Even if nominal wages in Japan are rising, they might not be keeping up with inflation. Continuing our last discussion, much of the current price pressure has been bad imported inflation. Think higher energy costs made worse by a weak yen rather than good wage-led inflation. If real purchasing power isn't growing, the domestic economy remains weak. This forces the Boje to hesitate on raising rates too quickly, prolonging Japan's role as the world's source of cheap money and the instability that comes with it. This isn't just a short-term trend. It's the result of a decades-long struggle. To understand the scale, consider this. At the peak of its 1980s asset bubble, the land under the Emperor's Palace in Tokyo, less than a square mile, was estimated to be worth more than all the land in California. And interestingly enough, the seeds of that bubble were planted by international politics. The story really begins with the Plaza Accord in 1985, an agreement where major nations, including the US, decided to weaken the dollar. This caused the yen to appreciate dramatically, hammering Japan's export-driven economy. In response, the Bank of Japan slashed interest rates to stimulate domestic demand, and that cheap money is what ignited the infamous asset price bubble. The bursting of that bubble led to a long slump and the radical policies we see today. Japan has spent 3 decades stabilizing its economy, but in doing so, has created a global dependency. So the thing is, these stability-focused policies have had a serious side effect. By keeping interest rates so low for so long, Japan may have created a zombie firm problem. The OECD defines these as older companies that can't even earn enough to cover their interest payments. These firms drain resources and suppress overall productivity, which is a cautionary tale for any economy that prioritizes stability over creative destruction. Its century has arrived, but it has arrived as a financial condition, not a productive one. So, what's next? The key is to watch how the Bank of Japan slowly backs away from its extreme policies, like yield curve control. Their gradual exit will be a critical test case for central banking everywhere. For us, the focal points are clear. Watch Japan's wage growth and inflation data. A while back, we stressed two tactical gauges too. The 160 per dollar line crossing it makes direct intervention highly likely, and the choreography between the Ministry of Finance and the BOJ, which can either reinforce or undercut each other. These numbers will determine the pace of the BOJ's actions. A faster than expected normalization could strengthen the yen, impacting the competitiveness of Chinese and South Korean exporters, and, as we've noted, intensifying pressure on Germany as well, and send shockwaves through global stock and bond markets. If instead the yen stays weak, the beggar thy neighbor edge for Japanese exporters persists, and the carry trade's global risk machine keeps humming. The yen carry trade highlights how one country's monetary policy can create global instability. Now, let's turn to another source of global shock, this time stemming not from a central bank, but from a geopolitical choke point in the Strait of Hormuz. Despite decades of climate summits and promises of a green future, coal's share of the world's energy supply has actually gone up from 23% in the year 2000 to 28% today. And this new global crisis is threatening to send that number skyrocketing. This is poised to trigger what some economists are calling a dash for trash inflation wave. See, coal demand is what's known as a lagging indicator. It reflects what's already happened in the economy. A global rush for coal would mean a second wave of inflation hitting energy and industrial goods, creating a huge headache for central banks. They would be forced to choose between fighting this new inflation and supporting an already fragile economy. As we noted a while back when the OECD erased its planned upgrade to global growth and warned of a stagflationary shock, this is exactly the kind of no-win setup that keeps central bankers up at night. We previously analysed how choke points like Hormuz were being weaponised. The conflict in Iran is choking global energy flows, with nearly 20% of the world's natural gas supply now stuck behind the Strait of Hormuz. The ripple effects are hitting with brutal speed. In Asia, major economies like Japan, India, and South Korea are either ramping up coal use or are days away from doing so. And remember, we also pointed out that China is comparatively insulated thanks to energy deals with Russia and a demand base that's more domestically driven, so its pivot is more strategic than reactive, a dynamic that could deepen an east-west split in energy systems over time. But that's not the whole picture. The real turning point is what's happening in Europe, the supposed heart of the climate movement. Continuing our last discussion about Europe's outsized vulnerability to external energy, the situation this time is different. It's not just prices, it's policy. Italy just announced it would postpone shutting down its coal-fired power plants for 13 years. Germany is now considering switching its idled coal plants back on. This move is so significant because it threatens to unravel years of complex policy. The EU has built its climate leadership on its ambitious Green Deal. A key part of that is the Carbon Border Adjustment Mechanism, or CBAM, which taxes carbon-intensive imports. A major U-turn on coal not only damages the EU's credibility, but also risks stranding billions of dollars in investments made by companies that were following the original aggressive green timeline. As we've discussed before, CBAM assumes steadily tightening carbon policy. Today's coal relapse scrambles those assumptions. This all begs the question, why not pivot to renewables? The answer reveals the deeper crisis. The very same conflict driving up energy prices is also causing global inflation and higher interest rates, making the massive capital investment required for wind and solar more expensive than ever. And as we said a while back, this is a supply-side shock. Monetary policy can't fix the supply hole without risking the broader economy. To understand why, you need to know about a concept called the levelized cost of energy, or LCOE. It's basically the total lifetime cost of an energy project for renewables like wind and solar. Almost all the cost is upfront in building the project. So when interest rates go up, the cost of borrowing that huge amount of capital skyrockets, making new projects financially unviable. Recent data already shows that even as overall green investment is up, financing for large-scale wind and solar farms has actually started to shrink for the first time in years. That squeezes the macro story we covered with the OECD's warning now showing up directly in project-level math. Furthermore, renewables have their own geopolitical vulnerability, a heavy reliance on critical minerals overwhelmingly supplied by China. We recently outlined how this could harden a split between a dollar-priced energy world and a Russia-China axis. So what this creates is a new and even more potent form of energy dependency. We're talking about materials like polysilicon for solar panels and rare earth elements for wind turbines. China dominates the processing of these minerals. This means the world's energy choke point could shift from the Strait of Hormuz to Chinese industrial policy. For China, this provides significant strategic leverage. A temporary suspension of export controls on some of these materials recently showed just how sensitive global markets are to these policy decisions, giving a glimpse of the potential disruption if controls were ever fully weaponized. A few days ago, we said even small tweaks out of Beijing can jolt markets. This was that preview. This isn't a new playbook. It's a direct echo of the 1970s. Stagflation risk, a central bank bind, and a forced fuel switch. It all rhymes. And this echo is showing up in the data already. The most important thing to watch right now is consumer sentiment. Surveys like the one from the University of Michigan are leading indicators, and they are falling sharply on fears of stagflation. And the reason to flag this now is that a collapse in confidence can trigger a recession all by itself as people stop spending and businesses stop investing. It becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy before the full economic impact of the energy shock is even felt. We mentioned a while back that airline fare spikes and Wizz Air's profit warning were canaries in the coal mine, and that stressed households would create deflationary pockets in travel and hospitality, even as energy pushes inflation higher. Exactly the kind of muddled signal that makes policy decisions harder. President Jimmy Carter is remembered for putting solar panels on the White House, but his administration's real answer to the energy crisis was to aggressively develop what his energy secretary called America's black hope, coal. Now, that same desperate logic is re-emerging on a global scale. Decarbonisation remains a goal, but the hard reality is that an unstable world does not further the cause. It puts the entire effort at risk, proving that when a crisis hits, the cheapest and dirtiest fuel can quickly become the only option on the table. Unless the Hormuz choke eases and financing costs fall, the dash for trash we warn about shifts from risk case to base case. That desperate turn back to coal shows the brutal economic trade-offs leaders face during a stagflationary shock. Speaking of which, our final story takes us to a bellwether emerging market where that same pressure is creating a high-stakes paradox. For the first time on record, business optimism in Egypt has flipped to negative. Now, this isn't just a number. It's a full-blown crisis of confidence. When business leaders become pessimistic, they stop investing and hiring, which could turn a temporary slowdown into a much deeper, more structural problem for the country's long-term recovery. The country's non-oil private sector just deteriorated at its sharpest pace in almost 2 years. The S&P Global Egypt Purchasing Managers Index, a key economic indicator, plummeted to 48.0. This is its fourth consecutive monthly drop and its lowest reading since April 2024. Any figure below the 50.0 threshold signals contraction, not growth. The driver is a perfect storm of rising costs and crushed client demand, with firms directly blaming the ongoing Middle East conflict for the downturn. What's happening is that Egypt is facing a severe stagflationary shock. Stagflation is that nasty combination of stagnant economic growth and high inflation, and it's testing the durability of all the recent economic reforms and the major IMF bailout package. Input prices have surged at their joint sharpest pace in a year and a half, fueled by war-related commodity price increases and a stronger US dollar. This pressure is being felt on the street, with domestic fuel prices jumping by as much as 17%. In response, companies are raising their own selling prices at the fastest rate in 10 months. The core issue, though, is that they aren't raising prices fast enough. There's a growing unsustainable gap between the surging cost of materials and the prices companies are actually charging. This is called margin compression, and it's squeezing businesses dry. They are now facing a terrible choice, either pass on the full cost and risk scaring away even more customers, fueling a second wave of inflation, or start cutting jobs and production, which would deepen the entire economic contraction. However, if you zoom out, you'll see another layer to this story. Despite the grim headline numbers and unprecedented pessimism, senior economists at S&P Global Market Intelligence point to a massive disconnect. The data suggests the domestic non-oil sector is actually on a solid underlying growth path. You see, the PMI index is based on a survey of private sector companies, and the problem is it doesn't always capture the whole economic picture. In Egypt, it might be missing the significant contribution of the public sector, or overlooking other booming sectors like tourism and telecommunications. This is why you can have a negative PMI survey from private businesses at the exact same time the broader economy is growing. In fact, the current PMI figure, while in contraction, still correlates to an annual GDP growth forecast of around 4.3%. This creates a high-stakes economic paradox. You have a private sector bracing for impact, squeezed by war-related inflation, while the broader economy shows signs of fundamental resilience. Ultimately, the sharp drop in Egypt's PMI serves as a real-time barometer for the economic damage the Middle East conflict is inflicting on the entire region. It's a bellwether for emerging market stability. Continued weakness in Egypt could signal deeper disruptions to global trade, especially traffic through the critical Suez Canal. For our audience in China, this is crucial because it directly impacts China, Europe's supply chains, potentially forcing a costly rerouting of trade that raises prices for consumers and businesses alike. The situation in Egypt is now a live stress test. It's a battle between the powerful external shock of regional conflict and the surprising strength of its domestic engine. The outcome will show just how much geopolitical turmoil a growing economy can withstand. All market data is subject to rapid change. This report is for informational purposes only and does not constitute financial advice.
That's it for today on Voice Daily Finance. Follow, share, and stay tuned for daily updates coming your way tomorrow.